You're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies, brought to you with the support of the University of Sussex Business School. This is episode 52, where we discuss the revised edition of Rosemary Stewart's book, Managers and Their Jobs, a study of the similarities and differences in the ways managers spend their time. To get the text and for more information, please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. I'm Ralph Soule, coming to you from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
My name is Dr. Maya Koritsa, and I'm an associate professor at Warwick Business School in the UK, and I'm currently dialing in from Oxford, UK.
This is Pedro. I am calling from Lyon in beautiful France.
This is Tom, calling from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States.
This is Miranda, calling from Leamington Spa in the UK.
Well, thank you. Welcome, everyone.
Thanks.
Our selection today is based on research done by Rosemary Stewart that sought to discover some of the similarities in and differences between managers' jobs by analyzing how 160 managers in various industries and organizations spent their time for 4 weeks from specially designed diaries that they kept. In essence, Stewart sought a deeper understanding of what managers actually do. The research aimed to distinguish different kinds of jobs and to describe their special characteristics and problems. The book's intended audience is managers who are interested in organizing their time more efficiently, those who are concerned with management development, and research workers and managers who are interested in the study of management behavior. In Chapter 1, Stewart discusses briefly the different questions that researchers have asked about the nature of managers' work and the kinds of answers they have given. Chapter 2 is a detailed analysis of how the managers spent their time. The variations were due more to differences in the type of job than to differences between companies. Chapter 3 was an in-depth review of the time spent with other people, both within and without the organization. Chapter 4 looked at the variations in time fragmentation, a big issue for managers that was experienced by the managers. It sought to answer two larger questions. The first was, how fragmented were the managers' jobs? The second was, how did the jobs compare in the extent and nature of their fragmentation? Chapter 5 reviewed the variety within jobs. These variations observed, Chapter 5 reviewed the variety within jobs. The variations observed were grouped into categories: the place of work, the context, the activities, and the content. Chapter 6 classified 160 managers into job types on the basis of differences in the ways in which they spent their time. It was a cluster analysis done by a computer program, and they came up with 5 job types. And they were emissaries, which I thought was an interesting title, writers, discussers, troubleshooters, and committee men. Chapter 7 reviews the implications of these job types. Because the research sought to discover some of the similarities in and the differences between the managers, it also looked at the analysis of the 4 weeks and the implications concerning management training, because that's particularly relevant and interesting to the nature of the differences and the similarities of the jobs. Chapter 8, what do managers do? The main characteristics that came out of the research into how managers behave is at odds with the traditional description of a manager as somebody who plans, organizes, coordinates, motivates, and controls. And the end of the chapter has a very interesting section on temptations toward inefficiency, which I love. I love that word, temptation. And the last chapter, too little time, how to help yourself. The author suggests 3 strategies: examine the content of work, find out what happens in practice, and organizing the work to improve efficiency, with many practical tips for managers.
So I think we may jump into conversation by thinking about the importance of this book and how does it situate in the work we have discussed in the past in the podcast. I think it's particularly interesting to focus on it and to have Maya with us today, because it's part of our effort to not only try to discuss and understand the canon of organizational management theory, but also to expand it a bit, you know, to open up And I think Rosemary Stewart is one of those authors that, although very important, not always get the attention I think it deserves. You know, we know that her work, I mean, we know that the work of Mintzberg is very similar to the work she carried out, but in a way, I think that she's not always as known as Mintzberg, which, by the way, we discussed and had the privilege of having as a guest on episode 14. And the book is also, as we've seen, very interesting, very classical, because it touched, it showcases a different kind of approach towards trying to understand management by, in a first effort, trying to understand how the work really is carried out. And it's great to have Maya here today because she has carried out a very interesting research that I'm aware of with Davide Nicolini on that is kind of a replication of the work that has been done by Stewart and Mintzberg and others. And they were looking at the work of CEOs via shadowing. So shall we try to get a crack on the main ideas of the book?
Absolutely. And I think it's very interesting that the book starts with how management and the work of managers has been analyzed or studied in the past, because it's a nice way to place this research in context. Because as Pedro said, it's a different form, even though it's done similar to Mintzberg's work where he shadowed managers. In this particular case, Stewart used these time diaries of the managers. So that comes more in chapter two. But I think it's really important that she talks about, well, what is the job involved? How specialized is the job? You know, what form do the contacts take? What are the work patterns? You know, those kinds of questions. I won't list them all, but it's good to see how these things have been reviewed before. She also looks at, in chapter one, how it's been studied in the past. And that's another nice way of placing this research in context.
Another thing that seems distinctive, it's also this attention for time, in a way she's always trying to, it's kind of the angle of attack to understand management and the work they do in organizations is exactly how they spend their time. So in a way, she declines the answer of what managers do into how they spend their time, which is an interesting creative way to go about trying to answer such complicated issue.
But not only the quantity of time, but also time with different characteristics. So I find it quite fascinating and surprising the fact that I think in chapter 3 or 4, there is the quantity of time spent alone or spent with others. There's this distinction that I found surprising because I didn't think that that would be something that you would look at.
I wanted to hear a bit from Maya, and I think that she, of course, we have much to say, as she knows the literature quite well of similar studies. And I was curious to know more about what you think is striking about the book and what is the main core idea that seems to you relevant.
Well, I think what's really, really interesting about this book and Rosemary's work in particular, and we'll talk about that later on when we kind of expand that, is just how in many ways fresh this is. So just to give you one example, some of you might know, I think it was either this year or last year, Harvard Business Review published Michael Porter and Nitin Noria's How CEOs Manage Time. And it sort of had a sort of 12-year study from 2006, sort of looking at, I think it was 27 CEOs and their diaries over that time. Interestingly, Rosemary is nowhere cited, only Mintzberg is, even though they use him really to say, you know, his sample is 6 CEOs and a much more limited kind of sample. It wasn't a diary-based thing. So I think, and if you read in particular the last chapter, and we'll get to that, which of this book is really the sort of practical, almost HBR-esque expression of Rosemary's work, you know, that could be an HBR article, and it never really was. And I think a huge part of this book is also, and the reason why it's interesting to me is in many ways, it's not just full of really, really, really interesting ideas, rigorously studied. So this is the most quantitative study that Rosemary had done. The next ones were much more qualitative. But it's kind of full of these really relevant insights that are repeated, for instance, in this leader's calendar, you know, how many years later. So they're really, really core and relevant. And they have to do with really trying to say, okay, on what basis can we start with the work itself to try and understand what makes it distinctive, right? And this is something that she's kind of elaborated throughout and really did here in a really, really interesting way. So I think what she offers with this book is fundamentally, firstly, a sort of very quantified 160 people diary-based 4 weeks type of study that offers, as Raf was saying, kind of very 5 useful kind of job expressions where people can self-assess. And this is what the last chapter is really about, self-assess themselves, compare how did they spend their time, and then say, you know, how can they spend that time better, more efficiently, less efficiently. And she's also very forthcoming about the need for people to be self-reflective about their own, you know, biases and inefficiencies and tendencies toward inefficiencies, right? Raf is kind of touching on this. But I think one thing that's really important to say is, and this is sort of on page 9 of that first chapter where Rosemary situates what she's trying to do, is what this book does not do. And I think this is a really, really important because this also then situates her in the sort of bigger scheme of things. And what it doesn't do is very clearly it doesn't touch on that question number 5 on page 9, which is actually what kind of decisions does the job involve. She's very, very clear that in her diaries, the way the methodology frames, she could really just get to ideas of, you know, how many interruptions you have. So she tells us, for instance, that it was only a sort of half an hour period every 2 weeks that most managers had sort of free interrupted time. And that's great and interesting, but it doesn't tell us much of the how and why they did what they did. It also doesn't touch on specific decisions. So what we get through sort of the diarization, if you will, the methodology, is very kind of nitty-gritty senses of almost the flows, ebbs and flows, and how stuff works. But what we don't get is the nitty-gritty, the decisions, the ethics. She mentions only once as well, which I find interesting in the introduction, she mentions this idea that there's maybe something about the temperament and the moral character about people that might also make them more applicable, less applicable to certain kinds of jobs. But this is really not elaborated in the book itself. So I think it's important just to kind of say, and this is just an introductory overview of not just what Rosemary's work was trying to do, but what it couldn't do, given the methodology.
And yet she included a lot of really interesting profiles, stories about particular managers throughout, especially the latter chapters. So that kind of showed to me, for example, the power of the quantitative method to try to paint a picture of what it is that they do. And from that, even though she doesn't get into the content of the decisions, you can kind of infer what it is that they're doing on a routine basis. And she sort of, you know, laid those out in the stories later on when she describes the 5 different types and also goes into further analysis on how that translates into the daily activities of different clusters of manager.
I think that is right, but just if I could just jump in, I think there is something though that we need to be careful about. And Rosemary, to her credit, is very careful in this book about acknowledging the limitations of her method. And what we need to be careful about is the limitations of reporting. In fact, if you look through the appendix, she is very, very clear that, you know, the approach 200 and only 160 were really kind of complete in their diarization. And the diaries themselves, originally in the pilot, were a lot more detailed and were trying to get to some of the, you know, some of that context, some of those decisions, some of the nuances, some of the actual, you know, nitty gritty and the meat of it, and actually found that it was really impossible. And the most impossible thing actually also included things like, okay, am I doing listening here or am I doing planning here? Am I, you know, those classifications using those kind of traditional categories were very much not there. So I think that's also something that's, it's not, you know, it's not to discredit the work in any way, but I think it's important to say that, you know, that's a natural limitation of the method itself. It tends toward some things and tells us some things and not others, right?
Well, and one of the details she goes into in chapter two about the time is the construction of the diaries. And there's actually even more detail in the appendix, as Maya was saying, where they had to do a pilot study to figure out what worked and what didn't work in these structured diaries that would lend themselves to this computer analysis. And it wasn't clear if they had planned that from the beginning or not. But I thought, when I was first reading about how they did the computer analysis, I thought, what? You know, they're looking at the diaries and they're trying to do this computer analysis. And then you see, oh, but she's specially created these diaries to give this rich insight into these kinds of things. And I think Maya brought up a great point, where there's, you can only go so far into some of those things. But she did make an interesting observation, I think it was in chapter two, that some people really enjoyed doing the diaries because it gave them insight into what they were doing, and then some people just couldn't stick with it.
Okay. So having thought about the limitations and more or less what is the overall structure of the book, shall we try to think about the main ideas? I think it was particularly interesting, the fact that, and I'd like to hear more what Maya has to say about that, because she knows the literature very well, is that it seems that she has very clear messages from this book. You know, it's, as you mentioned before, something about this way in which the typical categories that we have since Fayol about what is management seems to crumble a bit once you get closer to the actual work. She also insists throughout the book on the fact that some of the standard classifications or ways of thinking about management, such as in hierarchical terms or level of seniority, are not necessarily ideal, because there seems to be much difference within, say, middle managers, depending on the type of management that they do, as she puts it, on the job type they have. So she seems to have very interesting messages that are trying to say something. And let's remember, this book was, if I'm not mistaken, published on 1967 for the first time, that back then were very revelatory to the way management was thought. So what do you think are the main kind of, breakthroughs that the book has offered, thinking about literature?
Well, I think it's exactly that, isn't it? I think in many ways what she, and I think actually, you know, the quantitative analysis was, and she moved away from that again, and I think it gave a lot, but also in some ways it hid a lot of her ideas. That she presented it in the way that sort of emphasized that. And I think that's something to just keep at the back of our minds, and we'll return to that when we talk about, obviously, the impact that she had more broadly. But I think what's really, really interesting is if we get toward the end of the book, for instance, all of that, you know, quant stuff that she ended up doing, and I'm calling it quant stuff, you know, not in any way dismissively, more sort of as a sort of general representation, is it got her to those, for instance, to those five, let's say, role positionings, tendencies, those groups, right? She calls them groups. And, you know, the emissaries, the discussers, the writers, the troubleshooters, and the committee men. And I think what's really interesting is what she tried to say is that it, by recognizing that at different points in time, and this is something you mentioned as well, different roles will require different orientations. Mintzberg, by the way, talks about this as postures, right? So at different points in time, your job will require certain things. So if you're, for instance, a sales director, so she uses sales director as really the emissaries, right, who are out there, plus, let's say, a CEO. So spending most of their time out there developing a network, spending a lot of time mostly on their own, not really reporting. They didn't have a lot of direct reports. That means that if you're, for instance, an HR person trying to develop next steps, or if you are us teaching, let's say, MBA students, a far more useful way to group them together is not hierarchy or, let's say, industry. It is the type of jobs and the type of challenges that you would then take on. So if you were a group of emissaries, it would make a lot more sense for you to be joining together and saying, okay, how are we doing our jobs? Can we compare and contrast the three? And she talks about it in the book as, or elsewhere, but now I'm losing track of different sources, but as sort of working in teams of three, right? With one person reflecting and two asking the other person to reflect on how to improve. Now, I actually would say that it's important that we compare our work to others, but it's that kind of detail, right? That kind of ability to appreciate where differences come from, and that differences are not just hierarchical, but they're actually coming from the content of the work itself. And importantly, later on, she then expands that in later work by acknowledging that roles are a sort of combination of demands, so what is demanded of you, constraints on your ability to do certain things, otherwise you'd be fired, and then choices that you make. And it's an important thing as well. She highlights the capacity to for people to shape also how they do their jobs as well. And in fact, the later part of the book is really importantly opportunities for people to reflect on how their own choices, and in particular, she talks about this belief in being indispensable as being the hallmark of poor management, right? Which is such a really, again, such a rich and valuable set of still relevant insights.
Well, and one of the things I thought was particularly interesting in the how they spend their time aspect of the book in chapter two was that not only is it not about hierarchy, it's also more, the differences are more about type of job, which that lends itself towards these, the job profiles she talks about in chapter six. And I think we have this, there's this other template that we use in management that where we say, okay, well, you're a entry level manager, so these are the kinds of, this is the nature of your job, and then you're the middle manager, and this is the nature, and then you're a senior manager. And she acknowledges those differences, but then says that there's much more to it than that. And in fact, it wasn't just a company thing, that you could find these kind of range of jobs in different companies. And so one of the things that stood out to me as a key insight from chapter three, when she talks about the time spent with other people, is the idea that career planning and management development would be helped if people had a knowledge of the range and nature of the context that are, or sorry, the contacts that are associated with different kinds of jobs in the organization. And I will say, after being a practitioner in the Navy for almost 30 years, to me, that was one of the hardest parts to learn initially for a new job is how do you get help? Who do you contact and how to reach them? So typically the person I relieved would give me a phone list. But that wasn't usually enough for me to know, well, why do I call this person and how will they help me? And so that took me several months in every new job to learn that. And I obviously didn't have it down in just a couple months, but it was one of the richest parts of understanding the nature of your job is who can help you and how can they help you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just to add something there, I think another thing that, again, Rosemary absolutely highlights is not just confirming again, and this is something that actually Mintzberg is often credited, but this idea that managers talk, that's what they do. That's fundamentally what they do, right? And then Mintzberg takes that into, you know, most of the managerial job is communication. But, you know, that's kind of, it comes from there as well. And I think what's also relevant about that as well is she acknowledges, you know, to your point, that different contexts as well, and you in different contexts and different stages of your jobs will also have, you know, different needs, and in particular, different kind of communication needs and different communication tendencies. So for instance, she makes a point, and I think this is in chapter three as well, where she acknowledges that if you are, for instance, you have a general managerial role as part of your role, so that means you're kind of managing other people, you're doing that kind of soft bit of keeping in touch, you're also in a larger organization, so the Army is a good example, and you are in a context where the rate of change is very high, what you will get is more intense communication patterns. Right? Because you will get greater coordination challenges, you will get more exposure to that versus, you know, other things. And you can appreciate here how it's going much, much further away from the simple idea that, oh, it's hierarchy, right? And so if you're a CEO, you would have more contacts. And if you are, you know, a lowly lower manager, you would have less. Actually, it's much more complicated than that. You know, size of your organization matters too. The rate at which it's changing matters too, right? So if you are, for instance, I can imagine, you know, to bring in Miranda, if you are in a smaller organization, right? But the rate of change in entrepreneurial organizations is, you know, massive. That would also explain the rates of communication, particularly informal communication, of a managerial role in that kind of a context, even if the size itself is quite smaller, right? So it's really interesting. Again, she gives us really useful parameters almost to organize our thinking and to begin to explore differences. And this is something that she goes on then in later books to explore as well specifically.
Yeah. Yeah, I find it it's all great points, and I find it quite fascinating. And I don't know, I'm very captivated by this idea of time and how it's been conceptualized, and it's a sort of a common thread, and it's something that I'd never thought about. I had some notes on this idea of time to think or no time to think. I don't know, I was thinking how difficult it is to conceptualize, and how actually possibly this idea of the diaries were actually something that could help the managers have time to reflect if they managed to stick to it. So I was quite fascinated by this side of it.
I was also fascinated by the discussion of fragmentation and unfragmentation in that same chapter, to the degree to which that the fragmentation of the job, which was to say, how broken up the manager's day was, whether you had a couple of hours of uninterrupted or relatively uninterrupted time to actually concentrate on something for a period, as opposed to constantly being broken up into 5-minute segments of, I got to talk to this person, I have to do this. And, you know, it's almost like being constantly running errands, and how that translated, that greatly informed, I think, and it came out when she compared the different job profiles, because you can see how fragmentation played into one of the key factors of separating, say, one group from another. It kind of reminds me of how I saw that among different bosses who I worked for, some of which were vigilant about wanting to protect periods of time, whereas others who were particularly content with going from, you know, minute by minute engagements. And so, the fragmentation of the day as a key component in this idea that managers don't really have time to think was just struck me very much.
Yeah. So we talked about the fact that communication is central for the work of managers. You know, we're always talking with other people. This issue of not having time to think linked to fragmentation. And it's interesting because even from the book in itself, she weaves in some of her findings with previous literature. And it seems that that was already a constant finding. And if I'm remembering correctly, and I would like to hear from Maya, it seems that it's something that she still found out in her research today. So it seems that a part of the managerial work are still almost like timeless. You know, it's like almost like a constant finding. The fact that you are working via and through others, that you are usually pivoting from meeting to meeting, always involved in communication. And it's something that I'd like to talk more about later, is how much of the work that's been carried out is shaped by the organizational structure around.
Yeah, I mean, just to jump in on that, I think you're absolutely right in terms of it reflecting so many of those kind of key lessons. And it is, it's very much, you know, fragmentation first came from Sune Carlson's work, you know, in the sort of 1950s, which was the first observation-based study of Swedish CEOs. And in fact, Mintzberg acknowledges this very clearly in his, both in 1973 and the Nature of Managerial Work, and in his HBR article in 75, right? So I think these are lessons that are absolutely is the case that they've been around for a while. And I think actually, not to sort of jump ship on this a little bit to make other sections, but I'm not necessarily convinced, and in the sort of 2000s and on, there's been a lot of debate about the sort of post-bureaucratic sort of managerial work, etc. I'm not quite sure. I think we can talk about some contextual differences. I think we can talk about stages of at different points of organizational development, certain kinds of managerial, certainly general managerial jobs might require certain things. But I think it's I remain reminded and convinced that there is something general about these things. And I think this is also where Mintzberg ends as well. One thing I'd just like to say, which I think, again, going back, I don't want to sort of talk too much about this. She makes this really, really clear point that in the diaries, she didn't want to kind of record thinking. She says she didn't want to record thinking as a separate activity because this might be asking them to make an artificial distinction between thinking and other activities. And she cites a Weick actually on the separation of thinking and doing and this being sort of fake. But at the same time, she also talks about how a lot of people in her sample traveled a lot and they didn't do any work. I think this is a not bias, but a methodological limitation insofar as I've observed managers, in my own study of NHS CEOs of healthcare executives in the UK, and we shadowed them for periods of 5, 6, 7 weeks. And I can tell you, they think all the time. And when they think they're doing everything else and thinking at the same time. So it's more a sense of, I don't want to create a sort of, again, she says she doesn't want to create this artificial sort of a division between thinking and doing, but she ends up not really then in her work capturing the thinking bit. And again, to bring back why I think that's important, the thinking bit is in part an articulation or eventually articulation of the why question. And I think the why question when it comes to managerial work is really, really critical. And unfortunately, to the larger extent in terms of the content of the work itself, of priorities and so on, remains unarticulated due to the method in this work. And I think this is just something to keep in mind.
Well, I think that was a great point, acknowledging that that's more of a methodological limitation. Mm-hmm. Than anything else, because I find it very hard to believe that the managers aren't thinking or aren't considering planning or those kinds of things while they're traveling to visit customers or just between meetings. And I think even in meetings, when someone's participating in a meeting, they're thinking all the time, as you said, Maya. So I don't think it's an error of the study. It's just something to keep in mind that it's probably just the nature of the way the study was conducted. It was not so easy to collect that kind of information.
And in fact, just to add to that, I mean, the final chapter, which is the bit about, okay, so what can you do about this, right? So you don't have time. You feel like you never have time. How can this help you? It fundamentally encourages them to reflect, right? Because reflection is fundamental to making any kind of a change in once. And she's also, and this is, again, so valuable. It's so correct. I mean, I hesitate to say correct, but it continues to be relevant. Right? The sense that, you know, of course you must reflect, because of course, most of the time we act habitually. And she talks about managers also locking themselves into and being locked by others, most notably by their bosses, into certain kinds of patterns of reactive behavior. And so for her, reflection was step one to a more active management of one's diary and therefore also of one's, in her later work, of recognition of one's demands, recognition of one's constraints, and recognition also the kind of choices that are genuinely open to them.
Yeah, it's one thing I wanted to bring up before we close this part is exactly, I think the book is very interesting because it has this very strong, I don't want to say just practitioner, but this attentiveness for the phenomena and for the audience that can be interested on that, which are both people that are involved in training managers or practicing managers themselves, which we not usually see, of course, in traditional organization management theory books. And it's kind of interesting that this is coupled, as you were saying, on this attention to reflection of this first step on a specific kind of becoming a better manager or becoming, you know, an attentive manager, whatever that means. And reading, I don't know much about the position of this idea in the literature, but it seems to me that's almost like it's not random. It's almost like this attention for this more practitioner approach, this more applying to this more like research report coupled with reflection, is all tied together in a specific kind of research program and a larger idea about social sciences and what does research in management and organizational theory has to do. You know, it doesn't seem to be just something that is stitched there, but reflect an overall agenda.
Yeah, I think, and that's absolutely a really, really important point. Not only does this reflect at the time what was happening in the wider kind of scheme of things when it comes to management, but I think it also reflects who Rosemary was. You know, she involved both with the Tavistock Institute in London. She was working with the Acton Project, which was very, very much about, and that's where she came into this, Lord Acton sort of, let's call it think tank, that was really working with public sector organizations to try and understand them. And that was her sort of first project into that. She's from the very beginning, and she talks about this in her 2003 Leadership Quarterly, did this kind of sort of reflections on her opus, right? And she talks about that in that publication, in the sense of this is my history has always been informed by wanting to understand the practice of these things. And in fact, you know, my alma mater at Oxford, Templeton College, and indeed Side Business School at Oxford, stemmed from the Oxford Institute for Management Studies, which was the original Templeton, then became Templeton College, then moved into Said Business School. And she taught there for many, many, many years. This was, you know, she taught on programs throughout. So for her, I think that's also an interesting thing. She was a teacher. She taught executives. She was active as a researcher. And she will say almost publication always came as an afterthought. And I think that's perhaps something also to keep in mind when we get to the question of her wider take up in the literature.
That's all for part one of episode 52. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the discussion and found it valuable. If so, please tell your friends, colleagues, and students who may be interested in these topics about the podcast. You can also give us feedback, which we'd love to receive, via Twitter, Facebook, or our website, which is where you can also subscribe to our newsletter. Please join us next time as we continue discussing Rosemary Stewart's Managers and Their Jobs here on Talking About Organizations.